It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At the Hive Podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. For now, I am your host Jonathan, as usual, and as always, I'm joined by Chase. Chase, how are you?
I am doing very well. It was a eventful Hornets trade deadline. I think, with no context, that statement is true. But whether how you want to interpret that is entirely up to the individual.
The Hornets made two trades on trade deadline day, which is like twice as many as they normally make. So in that respect, yeah, they were wheeling and dealing.
Exactly.
So the two trades, I mean, if you're listening to this, you care enough about the Hornets that you already know what the trades were. But it ended up being Jalen McDaniels to the 76ers, and in return, the Hornets got Svi Mihailuk from the Knicks, kind of as a three-team trade, and then their own second-round pick. Well, it's technically the best, most favorable three different team second-round picks, so it's going to be the Hornets pick, and a 2029 second. What was the other one?
2027 second-round pick. It's also a most favorable situation. I think it's like New Orleans and Portland.
Something that we don't have to worry about right now. Very relevant because it's a second round pick and they're thrown around all over the place. We'll talk about that later. Other teams use them as like legitimate currency. And then anyway, the other trade the Hornets made was Mason Plumlee to the Clippers, which has made sense all season long because they had one center on their roster. And in return, they got Reggie Jackson and a 2028 second round pick. Reggie Jackson is getting bought out. He's not going to play for us, thankfully. And so we basically traded. We got Mason Plumlee shipped out for a very future second-round pick. I guess we'll start with the Jalen McDaniels trade. I read this in the Athletic, and it seemed true. Jalen McDaniels being involved in that trade at all just kind of seemed like a random. Like, why was he even in this, and why did the Hornets get so little back for him? And that kind of was like, yeah, kind of see that. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I kind of felt a similar way at first, because, like, the Sixers very easily could have just gotten a couple seconds for Tybalt.
Yeah.
And the Blazers just gave them, like, two picks for Tybalt or something, and instead the Hornets just kind of jumped in and gave Jalen McDaniels to the Sixers while not getting a player in return that they're going to like actually keep in the rotation, because the Blazers had just gotten Mihailuk the night before in the Josh Hart Cam Reddish trade, so they just rerouted him to Charlotte. He's on a $1.8 million contract, so it wouldn't be surprising at all if they waive him as well along with Reggie Jackson. And then the Hornets also gave up a 2024 second round pick along with Jalen McDaniels to the Sixers. I think the pick is via New York, so it'll probably be like below between 45 and 60, I would say, in the bottom half of the second round. So it's really, they only netted one second round pick in that trade along with Mihailuk. So it's very weird that they kind of just jumped in there. I guess if I like that is what Jalen McDaniels' market was, then that's what the market was, and you just kind of take what you can get. But I don't know. It seemed like there would be more than that, because he's been really good this year. He's on a very low contract, even though he's expiring and is an unrestricted free agent this year. But I mean, you assume that any team trading for him would also be inclined to re-sign him, or would be like a playoff contender that would be able to offer him a role or something that would be intriguing to re-sign. So I would agree with that.
Right. It was like, it almost feels like the Sixers and Blazers were like making this trade, and then the Hornets like, hey, we can help. Here's a guy to replace Tybalt, And the Sixers are like, what? Okay, sure. Cause
yeah, right. Or like, why if it was the Hornets and Sixers were discussing it per se, why wouldn't the Hornets just take Tybalt back, even though like they have to pay him as well, and just get like a player or something along with the picks? Or it does seem like a weird framework from Charlotte's perspective.
Especially because, like, just kind of, if we kind of tie this into the rumors that we had been hearing leading up to the trade deadline, the 76ers were not a team that was rumored interested in Jalen McDaniels, I don't think, and a lot of other teams were. And the Hornets were apparently interested in Tybalt. So it's weird that we, like, helped the 76ers move Tybalt somewhere else and gave them a player that I didn't know they were connected to at any point during, like, the lead-up to this. So it just kind of feels very out of left field. And like you said, it's usually kind of pointless to pontificate on what we could have gotten or what we should have gotten or how much a player should have been traded for. But it just feels low based on the stuff we had heard rumored wise. Like, it seemed like there was a demand for him. It seemed like there was a market for him, and getting just like a second round pick for him as like a throwaway in a trade didn't seem like it matched what we thought teams valued of him going into this deadline.
Yeah, but I mean, good for Jalen, though. He might start for the Sixers in like a deep playoff run. Like, if they move PJ Tucker to the bench and Tobias Harris to the four, he could be the starting three on one of the best teams in the East to round out his contract year. So it definitely works out for him, I would say.
Yeah, I'll be rooting for him. I'm excited to see how he does. It's always interesting to see how Hornets players do away from the Hornets, because it tends to be not good. So always
yeah, right. How do you have any burning hot Svi Mykhailiuk's takes? Are you excited to watch him? I was surprised to see, I guess not surprised, but he has been in the league every single year since he came out of college. He has not missed a season. So he has been a consistent NBA player at the very least.
I actually almost like kind of looked at the same thing and was just a surprise earlier, because I was pulling up his stats earlier, and because I knew he's bounced around a lot, but yeah, I was surprised to see that he's been in the league and like played a decent amount of games and just kind of hanging around as a 3-point shooting specialist, shooting 36% from three.
Yeah, he's been in the league since 18-19, and he only twice has he spent the full season with the team. And this year will not be one of those years either, obviously. So
right, yeah,
but not even he can shoot anyway. But I wouldn't be like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Hornets waived him. Would you?
No, I mean, I would have. Not, I guess I would have think they would have done it right away if they were going to do it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But I don't think he'll be the first one gone if the Hornets decide to do the 10-day thing and someone they like in 10 days. Like, someone comes in and plays well on a 10-day like Isaiah Thomas did last year, and they're like, oh, we want to keep you around. Like, the next guy to go is going to be Svi. Like,
yeah, I think I agree with that.
Yeah, just like no reason to waive boat like him right now. And especially, like, I don't know. I don't think he's going to get a job if he gets waived right now.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if that. I mean, all the names on the buyout market would probably be a little bit more attractive to a playoff team.
He's going to be pretty far down the list. Yeah,
I would say so.
Real quick, I guess we'll talk about the ramifications of it. I guess this means more minutes for JT Thor and Bryce McGowan's, and maybe James Bouknight gets to play.
Yeah, I think that is probably the hope, is that eventually James Bouknight would be able to crack the rotation somehow with this void of minutes. Because, I mean, Jalen played a lot, so there will be a lot of minutes to be split up after this now. I mean, tomorrow, who knows if the Hornets are going to have like all of their two-way players available. I mean, who knows when Kelly Oubre is going to be healthy again anyway. Like, there's quite a few minutes to go around on the wing. So I it seems like Bryce McGowan's might have the upper hand and just getting off the bench first, but it would be nice to see Bouknight get in there. It's been quite a while since he has played in the game. So it would be nice to see.
The other trade, like I said, Mason Plumlee for Reggie Jackson and a 2028 second round pick. I guess it's good that so the general sentiment around this trade is that, like, yay, we got rid of Mason Plumlee. And the whole point of getting rid of Mason Plumlee is so that we have minutes for Mark Williams and Nick Richards. and then getting rid of him allows that to happen while also getting some sort of value back. The value we got back is very minimal, so we essentially just like got rid of him to open up minutes, but it's like we could have just done that anyway. So like I'm glad we get to see the young guys play, but it's just such a, I don't know, underwhelming return to get rid of Plumlee, who's, we capitalize on like his best season of his career by getting a second round pick 5 years in the future.
Yeah, I think underwhelming is probably a pretty good word to describe this entire trade deadline. Like Mitch Kupchak did what a lot of Hornets fans wanted, I think, what he himself wanted to do was just free up minutes for Mark Williams and Nick Richards, get off of like the veteran contracts that they had that were expiring, maybe capitalize on Jalen McDaniels' value if they weren't going to re-sign him, which I imagine was part of that trade as well. There had to have been some sort of maybe discussion between him and the Hornets, or like some sort of feeling that the front office had that he wasn't going to be coming back in unrestricted free agency, so they just traded him anyway. But I mean, maybe not also, but I mean, it does feel like they could have gotten more, because there was a rumor that Plumlee was supposed to be available for potentially a first round pick, which always seemed like a lot, because the only team that's at like the bottom of the first round this year that has their own pick to trade is Sacramento, and they're 23rd currently. Obviously, they didn't even trade for a backup big anyway, and so they didn't think that they needed one badly enough to trade the 23rd overall pick in a pretty deep draft for an expiring contract, which is fair. So I don't know. Maybe it's the best they could get, but it is definitely underwhelming.
Yeah, like I said, like kind of tying it back to the rumors, it's weird seeing rumors that like the Hornets want a first round pick for someone like Mason Plumlee, and then like the Kings are interested in players like Mason Plumlee, the Clippers are interested in players like Mason Plumlee, and the Hornets, the best they can get from their asking price of a first round pick is a second round pick from in 2028, like almost as far away as possible. And it's like, did the price really come down that much at the 11th hour? And then like teams like the Kings, also have second round picks like this in like this draft. Like they have the 36th pick, they have the 53rd pick. Like, I don't know. It felt like such a low price compared to like the values we were getting heard thrown around prior to yesterday's deadline. So that's the kind of underwhelming part. I guess though it's cool that they're opening minutes for the bigs. But real quick, I wanted to go back to what you said about Jalen McDaniels, because I think that's important to talk about. Him and PJ Washington are both free agents this summer, and I think PJ is a slightly better player, a higher ceiling player. Regardless of your evaluation of them, if you think they're even, I think they're pretty close to even, and whatever one you give the edge to, PJ being a restricted free agent makes him a much better bet to keep, to hang on to in this summer than McDaniels.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen could just leave. I mean, he could leave the Sixers. Like, there's not even a guarantee that he would re-sign there, or like would be able, they'd be even want to re-sign him to any sort of long-term deal if his market ends up being driven up. PJ, you can like control his market. You know what other teams are offering him. You have a chance to match it. You can negotiate an extension with him yourself. Jalen's much more of a wild card that you really have no guarantee at all that you're going to be able to keep him, even if you give him a good offer that is, you know, beats other teams' offers or something like that. He might just leave because he wants a different role. So I definitely agree PJ's contract is the more valuable asset between the two of them. I also agree that PJ is like a better player, better fit for the Hornets long term, probably, even if he would command like a higher dollar value in free agency. But I'm definitely, if it was like a PJ Washington versus Jalen McDaniels thing, I think that they made the right choice, at least from how you can view it now.
Yeah, I think so too. I know we all get very frustrated with PJ's inconsistency, but the ceiling is much higher. Like he's a better, higher potential shooter. He's got a deeper bag. He's a more versatile, I think, maybe not always focused, but more versatile defender. And when he's locked in, he's a better defender. So it's just about, you know, channeling that. And I know it's been around for a while. He's been around for a while. So like asking him to continue to improve might be asking a lot, but yeah, I think it's the higher ceiling move. And then just I feel like being a restricted free agent kind of cools a market on him to begin with, because teams that do have cap space don't want to tie it up in like PJ Washington. So then you kind of have that leverage over him. And then you can, you are guaranteed you can keep him if you want him. Where Jalen McDaniels, no matter what you do, like you said, he could just walk out the door. So, but anyway, back to Mason Plumlee. Ramifications. Nick Richards is going to play again. Mark Williams will. Do you think Mark Williams starts, or do you think Steve Clifford does the weird thing where Mark Williams keeps his bench role and Nick Richards starts and takes all Plumlee's minutes?
I think that some Hornets fans would riot if Nick Richards was the starter, but I do think that Mark will start ultimately. I mean, right now he seems to have like more frequently be getting the backup center minutes. I mean, he does get the DNP sometimes and Nick plays, but I think that Mark has been getting them more consistently lately. So it feels he would start anyway.
It feels like it, and I think he will. I've also just kind of, as I was speaking, had the thought and wouldn't be surprised if Steve Clifford's like,
it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, continue in your bench role where you're getting comfortable. So you're going to play maybe a few extra minutes. Like, instead of playing 17 to 20, you'll play like 20 to 24, but you're still going to come off the bench for the second unit. Nick Richards will just leapfrog you into the starting lineup. So, yeah. Don't want it to happen. Don't necessarily think it will happen, but wouldn't be surprised if it happened.
No, not at all. I feel they should just split the center minutes like 24-24, like right down the middle, and just start Mark, do whatever you got to do, close with whoever is playing better that particular night, and then there you go.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. I think that's about it. I guess the moves that it didn't make, Kelly Oubre is still here, Terry Rozier is still here. I don't know if Kelly Oubre's injury had anything to do with that, but
very, very quiet on the Kelly Oubre front. There was literally not a single rumor about him since like right after he got hurt, pretty much.
Right. So I guess I don't know if we intend to keep him past this season. It almost feels like the Hornets should try to, right? Because like,
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they did keep him.
So the other thing, I guess, because I was going to wrap up by kind of saying, like, sum up your feelings like we kind of started with. But I think one of the things that, to me, has made it more underwhelming is, like, it did signal a direction. Like, it's the youth. We're going towards the youth. We're not trying to win anymore, which I think was obvious for a while anyway. But the thing is, like, we didn't change. The summer doesn't change, right? Like, we got rid of expiring contracts. We didn't open up any cap space. We didn't really get much draft. We got a little bit of draft capital for this summer, but for the most part, like, we're not going to have, the Hornets aren't going to have any cap space to sign anybody outside of the organization. And it's just going to be kind of like, where do the Hornets go to improve from here? And this trade deadline didn't set up to make that question any easier to answer.
No, it really didn't. I think maybe this draft period, or at least after the finals, once the trade window is really open, and between then and the start of free agency, when teams' cap sheets start to fill up, then it will become really clear, because I think it will be easier to move players like Terry or Gordon Hayward or even like PJ or something, like, not that he can be traded in the summer, but it's easier to move players that have like real value, I think, when teams are like resetting their rosters rather than in the middle of the season. So maybe that's why it kind of just seemed like the Hornets were making moves around the margins rather than doing more of a reset than what people wanted to see or thought that they should be doing. They certainly might still do that, but the deadline is not, teams don't do that very often in the middle of the season compared to in the summer or something, or what, any time in the off season when you have much more time to think about moves and plan them out. Yeah. And can go into training camp with a roster and don't have to reassemble guys on the fly when you have a road game the day after the deadline or something like that.
Right. Well, there's one team that did that. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. But yeah, all in all, I think underwhelming, like we said, trade deadline. Can't say it was like bad, because the Hornets did get value out of players that were going to walk away for nothing, maybe. At least in the case of Mason Plumlee, that we're definitely going to walk away for nothing. So I guess they get points for that. Just, I don't know. Would have been cool to see more.
Ken, are you there?
Cool. Anything else you wanted to talk about on the Hornets front before we take a quick break and spend a few minutes just talking about the rest of the league?
For anyone Let's listen to a word from our sponsors.
One more time, maybe. Yeah, just about. Yeah.
for the last time.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to that The Hive podcast. So the trade deadline happened. Hornets, like, just super cool trades. The rest of the league was way more fun.
Way more fun.
So this happens a lot of trade deadlines, but there's so many trades that are just almost like they're like role players for role players, and they're kind of like on the margins. And it's like, are you guys just like kind of bored? Like, it's like fantasy football, and it's just like, I'm tired of seeing these players. Let me get new players because it's fun. Because sometimes these, like, there are trades that just, like, I don't see how this made, neither of you got worse, but I don't know if either of you got better either. Just kind of like change for change's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And the amount of second round picks that went flying around today was completely ridiculous. I don't know if this is accurate, but I saw someone in the replies of like Mark Stein or something tweeting that there were 130 second round picks total exchanged in this like deadline period. Mark Stein said that 16 trades went down yesterday and today. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah. 130 is probably an exaggeration, but I know the Warriors gave up five
to get Gary. Yeah, it was like five each. I think multiple teams gave up five. Multiple teams gave up like three or two, and then there were like pick swaps and the Suns and Nuggets trade with four draft picks, or Suns and Nets trade that had four draft picks. There was a lot going on.
Right. Yeah. So like the Clippers sent 2 second round picks to the Nuggets for Bones Highland. Hawks sent 5 second round picks to the Warriors for Bay, and the Warriors sent those 5 second round picks to Portland for Payton. James Wiseman's been traded, so I think we got the better of that deal.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that we can officially put that to rest, that the Hornets, the best player in the draft fell to the Hornets at number 3. We did not, by any chance, miss out on anything.
Frank Kaminsky's on the move. The other thing that was kind of funny, several players dating back to Wednesday with the D'Angelo Russell, Russell Westbrook, Mike Conley trade, players getting traded back to teams they already played.
Yeah, for. That happened a lot. It's very weird.
It's so weird. D'Angelo Russell back with the Lakers.
Eric Gordon and the Clippers.
Eric Gordon back with the Clippers. John Wall got sent back to the Rockets, which is so funny.
I know after the podcast he made like 2 weeks ago, that is very funny. That was mean. I didn't even wait to do that.
What was the wait? I didn't even see the podcast thing. What was that?
Oh, he went on Theo Pinson podcast, who a great podcast, by the way, easily my favorite like NBA player podcast. Shout out to Theo Pinson. He went on his podcast and basically was like detailing his time with the Rockets and was just like not like shitting on their organization, but definitely was not speaking fondly of them, being like they were not trying to win at all. Like, it wasn't a good time. Like, it wasn't a great like culture. Like, he didn't enjoy his time with when James Harden was there, even though it was very brief when they were on the team together. So, and then like 2 weeks later, he gets traded to the team that he was just like disparaging openly on a podcast. So very ironic on that one. There's just so much that like he said in that podcast that would not endear him to that organization at all. So of course they just bought him out immediately.
I have to go check on that. But I know I was explaining to somebody earlier. It was like, yeah, so he played for the Rockets. He got traded to the Rockets, and the Rockets decided it was time to be bad. So they're like, we're going to let the young guys play so we can see who's good and also help us lose so we don't have any room for you in the rotation. So he's like, I don't even care. I'll come off the bench. I just want to play basketball. And they're like, no, we can't let you play basketball. You might make us win too much. He's like, all right, then please let me leave. And they're like, no, you can't leave either. And he just got stuck, like not allowed to play basketball for like a year. And then he finally gets free and he goes to the Clippers. And then he gets free and he goes to the Clippers for 6 months and they send him right back to the Rockets.
It's a cruel, cruel world that we live in. It's a very cruel world.
Yeah, but Bruno Fernando is a very inconsequential player, but he got sent back to the Hawks.
Yeah, Another Justin Jackson got sent back to the Thunder from the Celtics for Mike Muscala. Yeah.
So yeah, the theme of this trade deadline is players returning to teams they had previously played for. And then also Kevin Durant is a Sun and Kyrie Irving's a Maverick. And the Nets are on national TV the day after with none of their good players. Except for
the Cam Thomas Nets are going to, yeah, exactly. The Cam Thomas Nets are going to be awesome. Like it's crazy how much their team has changed over the last few days. They had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons like 5 days ago. And now like not even including the days that Kyrie had a trade request. Like if you gave turn the clock back a week, there is literally no rumbling whatsoever that the Nets are going to be split up. They're like a top five team in the East. They're doing well. They're going to be a playoff threat, blah, blah, blah. They're going to add to the team and make a finals run. And now the best player on the team is Cam Thomas.
They were talking to Kyrie Irving about an extension like a week ago.
Yeah. Like it is unfathomable how quickly all of that happened. I wasn't even awake for when Kevin Durant got traded. Were you up for that? Because it was,
yeah,
that,
it was.
Was it like, I think it was like 1:05 in the morning or something like that when
it was, it, so I was broke. Yeah, I was watching YouTube on my computer, so I didn't have my phone like next to me, and I have Twitter notifications on for Shams, Woj, and Chris Haynes because you never know when news is gonna break, and thankfully those guys have like their robots and they don't tweet anything other than news, so. My phone was just like sitting off to the side and I was watching YouTube and I finished watching the videos watched on YouTube and I picked my phone up and it's just got like 1,000 Twitter notifications. Like, what is going on? And I was like, oh, dang.
You're like, oh, that's going on.
That's going on. So I wrote the little like trade deadline primer open thread thing and I finished it and I scheduled it. And then I went over to YouTube and watched some stuff and I had to go. I was like, God, I'm not going to go back and add this to the stupid trade deadline primer thing because it happened before I published it. And so, yeah, it was, I saw it and then it was like right before I went to bed. So I think it's going to be fun to wake up to tomorrow. But didn't Kyrie also say basically like in his press conference with the Mavericks after the game that like he was never long for the Nets. He could tell pretty quickly that it wasn't going to work out and he was looking for a way out. Like,
yeah, no, he said that. he also said he was like, basically was like, I did my job. Like I got you all the way to the 4 seed. Like what else do you want from me? It's like, I don't know. I left them as the 4 seed, which is not even true because they're the 5 seed, but he's like, I left them as the 4 seed. Like, I don't know what else they want from me. It's like,
I think they wanted you to win a title.
Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know if that there's a long gap between what you gave them and what they wanted. It's like, I like whether or not that's right or wrong, like that there is quite a disconnect between those two things,
right?
It was so funny though. But I mean,
I kind of,
Mavericks are gonna
kinda
be fun to watch. They were fun to watch in that game that was on, yeah, national TV on Wednesday night.
I'm interested to see how it fits with Luka because both of them, I mean, both of them can shoot. Luka's not that great of a shooter off the ball, I don't think, but like,
yeah, he's not a great like catch and shoot guy, I don't think, but Kyrie is, so that will definitely work.
Maybe he'll get better at it if he actually like practice it, because Luka's always dribbling. But I kind of envy to an extent like Kyrie's complete and total lack of self-awareness and like obliviousness, because I feel like it just makes life so much better, right?
Like, oh, absolutely.
The average person like worrying about how they're perceived or like, you know, oh man, I messed that up, I'm so embarrassed. Like, dude just lives everything in the moment, completely blissfully unaware or unwilling to acknowledge like the actual truth of situations. Like, you could go to like the whole timeline of I read this tweet that Chris Haynes just put out, and I read it originally as John Wall was informed by the Rockets that he will not be waived. And I had to double take.
Oh God,
he will
that
be waived.
That would torture. Yeah.
I added my brain put the nod in there, just like wishful thinking. But sorry, John. But yeah, Kyrie has this like whole history of just changing his mind very randomly and suddenly, and then talking about that as if it was his feelings forever. Like, yeah, like going to Boston and telling Boston that he wants to be there forever, and then like
he has a quote saying that he's never going to leave from every team that he's played on so far. There's yes. one of him telling a kid in Cleveland, like in a like a little interview, which obviously he's not going to say that to a kid in like a public setting, be like, nah, I think I'm going to leave. But he says right. like, oh no, I'm always going to be a Cavalier. And then like obviously the Celtics one is like. He very clearly stated that he was going to re-sign and wanted to re-sign and then very quickly reverted on that statement. So that one didn't really work out well for him at all. But and then he said the same thing with the Nets, too. And then also was like, actually, I knew that I didn't want to be there, even though I directed myself there specifically to play in this location with this player. But I'm glad that we both got out now. It's just so awesome. It's so funny.
I never really wanted to be there, even though like they explicitly like does
they
coordinated.
They could have gone to multiple other teams, but they went to Brooklyn. Like they could have been on the Knicks together,
right?
Like,
and again, he was just talking about a max extension with them like last week.
It's yeah, like within the month of February, and he got traded on like February 7th. Like that, right. It went so. Fast, it was insane.
Yeah, and then I was worried too. The thing that was nice about the Kevin Durant news was I was worried that because I saw a couple things that like teams are starting to were kind of like stockpiling or maybe we're planning to stockpile assets in case Kevin Durant became available this summer. So the fact that the Suns pulled the trigger and got that domino to fall made the trade deadline easier for everybody. I think. Because I think there would have been a lot of holding patterns of like, we can't give up. We have to keep every asset we can because if Kevin Durant asks out, we want to, you know, we want to see it at that table. We want to have a shot at him. So thank you to the Suns for possibly saving the trade deadline and their new owner for trying to make a splash.
Yeah, that was talk about that one being quick too. He was in control of the team for like less than 24 hours. And then.
Right. And then Kevin Durant also was, they were, the report like earlier that day on Wednesday the Nets have no interest in moving Kevin Durant. And then like 12 hours later, they're moving Kevin Durant. So yeah, so much for that. So now we have the Cam Thomas Ben Simmons. And it's so funny because they got put on national TV the day of the trade deadline and they're missing all of their players. Let's see what else was significant other than the Nets trades. Russell Westbrook finally got traded out of Los Angeles.
Yeah, the Lakers got a lot of really good players this deadline.
Yeah, the Lakers, I feel like they've done that recently as well. Because I remember seeing this in a comment, and it felt like it happened a couple years ago, where it's like, why are so many teams giving good players to the Lakers for seemingly nothing? Like, what's going on here? But then, which I feel like happened a couple years ago, but then you look at their roster this year and they have no good players except for LeBron and AD. So it's like, okay, maybe that was a little exaggerated, but it does feel like they had a good trade deadline. Like D'Angelo Russell, I guess he's a better fit, right? Because you want the ball in Anthony Davis and LeBron's hands all the time, and D'Angelo Russell could shoot. And then,
yeah, I mean, he's having the most efficient season of his career right now too, which
right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's like 39% or 38% from three on high volume. Yeah. Like, a good off ball shooter, good point guard for when LeBron doesn't want to play point guard. Malik Beasley's a good shooter too. Jared Vanderbilt, very good defender.
Right. Like, they got a good lot. Players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mike Conley's a good fit for Minnesota, I think, with, you know, their other star players not being necessarily good defenders and Mike Conley having that kind of reputation. And also, personality-wise, Mike Conley is apparently the best human being in all the NBA, and Ant seems like he's super cool, but maybe like he's kind of reminds me of LaMelo, where he's like maybe got some growing up to do, and then Kat seems like he's similar. So I think Mike Conley is probably a better locker room presence than D'Angelo Russell probably is. That's just like entirely speculative, but from an outside perspective, it looks like that.
Yeah, he's always been like a very steady like. Point guard too, and that's I feel like D'Lo's a good player, but he's not like the same type of like heady point guard that can control pace and possession for you, which is something right. that the Wolves really need, I think.
Right, because otherwise they're like kind of it feels like they're a young team that's not directionless, but maybe close to needing some guidance. Now,
yeah,
Mike Conley's really old, so I don't know what the long term plan is, but Also, that whole trade kind of, to tie it back to the Hornets, was like, that seems like a possible landing spot for Terry Rozier for either one of those teams, Minnesota or Los Angeles. So you wonder.
Yeah, exactly. That I feel like might have been a, if the Hornets were going to move Terry, I feel like that and the Kevin Durant trade might have just killed his market, because the Lakers, Minnesota, and Suns were all teams that he would have fit on and easily had matching salary.
The other one, too, was with Russell Westbrook going to the Jazz, the Clippers were supposed to be targeting him in the buyout market as well. So even though the Clippers ended up picking up other guards, that I think took them out of the Terry Rozier market. But just the idea that, like, now they have a plan for Russell Westbrook, I think would have, you know, made the demand, diminished his demand anyway. So all those trades kind of the day before felt like they took a lot of wind out of the Hornets' sails for any big moves.
Who won the deadline? We have to answer this question. Who won the deadline?
We have to grade every trade, right? Like immediately.
Yeah. A D B plus.
Right. I think for this year it's got to be the Suns, right?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say too.
Like, I saw a couple. There's a couple things where it's like, I don't know, the Suns gave up a lot. Kevin Durant's kind of old. Like, Kevin Durant hasn't diminished at all.
So, literally, like, not in the slightest. Give up enough for Kevin Durant.
Right. So, like, I get the idea that, like, looking at his age, you think the decline is coming, but also, like, look at, like, would you give up 4 first round picks and a pick swap to trade for 34-year-old LeBron, knowing what LeBron is now?
And how right, like he's that was 5 years ago for LeBron. Like, you would, any team in the NBA would have done that, like, in hindsight. So there's a strong chance that KD is a similar situation.
Right. So, like, he's averaging 30 points a game with sharing the team with Kyrie Irving. Like, he's good. He's going to be good for a while. Yes. And he's shooting 56%. He's shooting a career high from the field this year and from the free throw line. So, like. Yeah, I think the Suns win the deadline. I think the Suns leapfrog to one of the top title contenders. They definitely strengthened the West, because for, like, the first time ever, the West was the weaker conference this year. And indirectly, I don't know how far behind they are, but if they get real hot and they catch up to the Nuggets, helps the Hornets pick, right?
Absolutely. Anybody, I'm rooting for the Nuggets because Jokic is one of my favorite players to watch, and I want him to have playoff success. But if they get in as, like, the 3 or 4 seed, that only strengthens his argument for being an NBA legend after he wins his first ring and is 3 MVPs in a row. So I mean, that works out. If the Nuggets pick is like 25th, exactly, and then the Hornets will get, you know, the 25th pick and then the first pick, and then they'll also have, like, what is the 34 right now is the pick that they are going to be getting from the Sixers in the Jalen McDaniels right now, trade. And then they have 42, which is the another pick that they got in the Jalen Durant trade. So they're and the Jazz definitely got worse trading away Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt for Russell Westbrook, who they're going to buy out. So there's a good chance that the Hornets have 4 picks in the top 40 of the 2023 draft. That is our silver lining for this trade deadline.
And the Nuggets, if the Nuggets fall off at all, we could end up with the Hornets could end up with the 27th pick, which, as we all know, is, like, the best pick in the draft.
Exactly.
It's a very outdated
27th pick every year.
It's kind of an outdated little trend, but I'm going to stick with it for as long as I can.
Exactly. It takes at least like 10 years for a trend to, like, not work anymore before people actually start noticing. Right,
because we got, like, Pascal Siakam, Rudy Gobert, Kyle Kuzma, and I think there's one other one in there.
I think Rob Williams was 27 as well.
Yeah, kind of in a narrow stretch. So
you know who was 27th? Cam Thomas. All the 27th pick needs is a chance. That's all they need.
The future all-time leading scorer in the NBA, since he's going to average 45 points a game, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. He's just going to score 43 every night forever, and then that's it. He's just going to be the greatest player of all time. So,
Do you have anybody that lost draft?
I thought the Raptors and the Blazers had very weird deadlines. The Blazers swapped they got 5 second round picks, which is good, but they swapped Gary Payton and Josh Hart for Cam Reddish and Matisse Thybulle, which is weird when Dame is having, like, one of the best seasons of his career. Jeremy Grant is an unrestricted free agent. Nurkic is, you know, he's Nurkic in, you know, the twilight of his prime, basically. So I don't know. I thought that was weird. And the Raptors gave up their first round pick in 2024 for Jakob Poeltl.
Player returning to their old team again.
Oh, another one. Yeah, there we go. So that one I also thought was weird because, like, they were rumored to be sellers. Obviously, they're not if they're trading a future first for a guy on an expiring contract. Like, who knows? That might be even weirder than the Blazers one to me because the Blazers got 5 second round picks. The Raptors didn't get anything really in return.
Right. That was a hard pivot, too, from what we heard. Like, all.
They could trade OG Anunoby, they could trade Fred VanVleet, like Gary Trent Jr., but they didn't trade any of them, and then they added Jakob Poeltl.
Right, for a first-round pick, which I didn't.
And Cam Birch, too, so, which is like kind of a throwaway if you're upgrading to Poeltl, but still.
Yeah, but it's just it's a weird move for a team that's like I said, they're supposed to be sellers, and then they're currently 10th in the East, and
yeah, they're below 500.
Not like well positioned to make a run or anything. It's not like they're like the Hawks, where the Hawks have had a bad season, but you've seen them be better with the same roster, and they're like, we just got to make a tweak here, and we can, you know, elevate our position or whatever. They're just kind of bad. Like, what are you gonna do from there? So I don't know. I don't know why you give up a first round pick for Jakob Poeltl in the Raptors position, and then like you said, and then the Blazers, who for years it feels like have been trying to build around Damian Lillard for the now with like wing defenders and stuff. They're like, how about we take the two good wing defenders that we have and we trade them for less good, younger, maybe good in the future wing defenders.
Yeah, and Gary Payton also went back to his old team.
Yeah,
but that was like, and the Blazers don't necessarily, like, their offense isn't like elite. They're not a fantastic shooting team, so I don't know why they're trading away like players trading for players like Matisse Thybulle that are going to greatly hinder that. Like, so strange to me. Like, if your offense is entirely Dame right now, like, you need to be adding to that, not necessarily like taking away from it and putting more on his shoulders.
Cam Reddish fits that bill too. I don't think he's still one of those dudes that's like supposed to be a good shooter, right? But
he just has never been like in his career. Maybe he figures it out right now. But
at any level.
Yeah, right. Like, he hasn't been a good shooter since like high school, I don't think.
He was even a good shooter in high school. I think he was a good shooter by like the numbers in high school. They were just like, this dude shoots well in an open gym and his form looks great. Like, this guy just looks like a basketball player. Cam Reddish, by the way, because I remember, and I know you know, not to make this a Cam Reddish bash session, but like how his historically terrible like shooting numbers at Duke, and they're like, no, trust us, he can shoot. He just got a little shooting slump. He's had 1 year better than 33% as a 3-point shooter in his NBA career so far. Not even 1 year. No, that's wrong. He's never shot better than like 33% from the 3-point line in his NBA career.
Yeah, it is. Maybe he just can't. It's been a tough road. Yeah, I think that might be the case. Is that he's not? He's not actually a great shooter. He's a decent defender, which is like the strange part about why he's just kind of fallen out of favor with seemingly every team in the NBA. But maybe the Blazers are going to play him a lot.
I don't know. Like I said, those are weird trades. Those are good weird ones. And I think those are kind of the examples of like what I talked about to open this half of the show. Of like, it just felt like teams were just kind of making moves to make moves, right? Like, the Blazers got back. They got rid of two players in Payton and Hart and got back, like, very similar players in Reddish and Thybulle that are just, like, I guess a little younger. So it's like, what did you really do with that? Though I guess they got a million second-round picks, so.
Yeah, there's always that. That'll be – presumably will be a good trade chip.
I mean, at this point, the utility of second round picks is more. Second round picks are like NBA cryptocurrency.
Yeah, like, literally.
Like, it's like the value of the second round pick is that you can trade it again later for other stuff. Not really the actual like using the pick. Like, no one wants to use second round picks. They just want to obtain a lot of second round picks to trade them to other teams who don't want to use them. They just want to use them to trade them to another team.
Yeah, like, right. That maybe the market will eventually collapse, and then we'll just get to like 2025, and everyone will have already traded all of their second round picks, and it'll just be like, oh, well, now we have to just use these because we have everyone we want, and we have all of these picks just left over. Or one team will just acquire them all. The Thunder and the Pelicans and the Jazz will just vacuum up every second round pick in the NBA.
You know, how many
have a draft for themselves?
How many teams do you think right now own their own second round pick in 2023?
I'm gonna guess it's less than half. I'll say like 13.
12.
Ooh, okay, that's pretty close. I mean, that doesn't surprise 13. Me at all, though.
If you count the 76ers who forfeited there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, right, because there's only 58 this year, because them and, like, the...
The Bulls.
The Bulls are both had to forfeit theirs for the tampering violation.
Which is funny.
Whatever.
Which is funny. The Bulls don't have their own second-round pick this year, so their second-round pick is the Nuggets second-round pick. So they're forfeiting the 59th. Huh. Right now, the 57th and the 59th picks are being forfeited. Like, super hard punishment there, NBA.
Oh yeah. Well, if you think about it though, the Sixers definitely could have used those two second round picks in trades today with how useful they are in currency though. So right, they missed out on somebody that they could have gotten.
That's the only utility of second round picks is that you can
so you can ship them on out to somebody else.
Yep. Anyway, if anything else you want to talk about? Fun trade deadline for the league.
Yeah, for the league it was definitely good. I think I'm excited to see what the Hornets rotation looks like going forward, and LaMelo Ball is still on the team, so that is fun. There's a lot of good players in the 2023 draft, so the Hornets will have four picks in that. I mean, there's still things to look forward to. Maybe not necessarily each individual basketball game, but some storylines and narratives for us to watch here now that the deadline has passed.
Right. Yeah, this is something. And then the Hornets will, like, we'll get to see some other, like, fun new player at some point, right? Because the Hornets will probably sign players to 10-day deals. And
that'll have to happen at some point. I'd be surprised.
Yeah, like, I think Bryce McGowan maybe gets, like, a full contract and makes room, something like that. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, thanks for listening. And we will talk to you guys soon.
See you guys.
Thank you.